Blog Talk Radio. You're listening to EFT Radio Online, where we explore meridian tapping techniques for self-help and peak performance. By listening to this audio, you agree to the disclaimer located at eftradioonline.com/disclaimer. If you'd like to get the schedule of all the upcoming EFT radio shows and access to archive shows, please visit us at eftradioonline.com, where you can subscribe to our free newsletter.
Welcome, everyone, to Tap Into Your Healthy Self. I'm Annabelle Fisher, and I am delighted to be back with you here today after taking some time out. I was away for a couple of weeks, and I think it's been a month now since my last show. I'm the author of the e-books Tap Into Your Fullest Potential, Using EFT to Live a Healthy, Joyful, Abundant Life, and Tap Into Your Healthy Self, Recognize the Potential Within You to Heal. I'm the host of weekly podcasts available for you to download on a range of EFT topics. EFT for pain, relationships, the highly sensitive personality, self-sabotage, how to get to core issues, and so much more. You can visit my website, www.theefthealingcenter.com, for details. Now, today's show, I am so pleased to be talking to Jeannie Patel Thompson. Jeannie refused surgery and healed herself of Crohn's disease using natural holistic methods. Of Crohn's disease, she has written this: "It is such a perilous, frightening illness. You would think only heavy drugs and surgery could provide a cure. However, drugs and surgery only suppress symptoms, whilst the disease worsens and becomes more systemically entrenched. Natural holistic methods, on the other hand, provide solid hope for long-term healing of Crohn's disease, since they heal the underlying root causes of this systemic illness." Jeannie is a natural health writer and consumer advocate. She's had numerous books published on natural healing for digestive diseases, including Listen to Your Gut, Listen to Your Colon, and the IBD Remission Diet. And they've sold in over 40 countries. Her articles on natural health topics have appeared in publications in the US, Australia, and the UK. Jeannie has appeared repeatedly on TV and radio, sharing her holistic protocols, bringing hope to the suffering. And for those of you listening live and on the archive, you can visit her website, www.listentoyourgut.com. And I'll just spell that for you. Listen, listentoyourgut.com. Listentoyourgut.com. Good morning, Jeannie. Welcome to the show.
Good morning, Annabelle. It's nice to be here.
Oh, I'm so pleased to have you here. And before we start, I'd really love to hear from you, the listeners. So I've opened up the chat room already, and if you have a comment or a question as you listen, feel free to post, and I'm very happy to read them out to Jeannie. I'm sure she's more than happy to answer anything that you have to ask. And if you want to call in, I've seen a number of you are on the line, and if you want to ask a question, you're most welcome to. So the number that you need to call in on is 347-215-6833. And if you'd like to ask Jeannie a question or you'd like to make a comment, just press 1 on your phone and I'll see your hand has raised and I'll unmute you. So Jeannie, it's such a delight to have you on my show. Finally, I'm just thrilled. And I wondered if perhaps we could start our conversation today by you explaining a little bit about your healing journey. So what led to the Crohn's, what you did, what you experienced, and so forth.
Well, if I were to go back into what led to me developing Crohn's, as I write about in my book, there's usually a number of factors that can contribute. So in my case, I was triple vaccinated because I lived in three different countries and received the full whack every time I moved. And then I had a very, very poor diet, you know, just basically a total American junk food diet. because my mom just didn't know anything about nutrition. Then I had, because my father was a doctor and my uncles were all pharmacists, I had massive antibiotics used for just about, I mean, if I had a cold, they'd give me antibiotics, never followed by probiotics. And then as well, my childhood was, physically abusive things happening in the home. So you put in all the physical factors and all the emotional factors and the dietary factors, and you wind up with, not surprisingly, a gut disease. So that was basically what I have identified as the causative factors. And then what happened was I was diagnosed, and because I'm from a family of doctors and pharmacists, you know, we immediately got me into the number one specialist in the country, and I, you know, followed the medical protocols for the next 3 years in full faith, because I'd never even heard of herbal medicine. And in fact, I thought herbal medicine was stuff used by people in the third world who didn't have enough money to pay for modern medicine. So that's where I came from. I was just so totally not an alternative or holistic person. But, you know, the fact is that the facts are the facts. And after 3 years, I was sicker than I'd ever been. I was taking 13 pills a day. The doctors were now insisting that I had surgery. I had Crohn's in my small intestine, my large intestine. They suspected it had spread to my stomach. And they basically said to me, look, you're just, you know, with the severity of the disease that you have, you are, you know, because they wanted to be honest with me, they, and so that I could prepare myself, they said, you'll be in and out of the hospital for the rest of your life. You'll never be able to have children. You won't be able to work, but, you know, it's okay because you'll qualify for disability insurance. And, you know, we're just going to try and keep you alive. And I went, well, I'd rather die. That's not a life. Like, who cares? I mean, it was like being tortured. So I basically got to the point after 3 years, and then I took home a bunch of textbooks, because this is all before the internet, read everything, and I realized if I have surgery, it's going to, the disease is going to jump to a minimum of 3 to 5 new sites, and I'll be 3 to 5 times worse than I am now, which is I have no life and I can hardly move around and I can't go out and et cetera, et cetera. So at that point I said, you know what, I need to find a different way, and I'll find a different way or I'll die trying, because I refuse to live like this. I had a deep conviction within myself that this was not who I am. I read a lot of books on, you know, accepting your disease and realizing that your disease doesn't define you and you can have Crohn's but still be, and I read them and I tried to orient myself that way, but I just kept, my gut feeling was, no, this is not who I am, this is not my life. So that led me to leave the medical profession entirely and strike out on my investigative healing journey. And then I tried every single thing I heard about, you know, every herb, every form of medicine, Chinese, Indian, you know, Philippines. And I lived in Tokyo, and then I lived in London for 3 years. So I tried the different therapies that were in Asia when I was there. I had acupuncture at a Zen monastery for 6 months. Like, you name it, I did it. And it took me 7 years to figure out what worked to heal myself, and then I put it out in a book for so other people could benefit.
Tell me a little bit about that gut feeling, because you said I had this very strong sense that this wasn't my life and this was not who I was. So how, what was that like? Because if you came from a background of medics, as you explained, through your family, how would you have known to listen to your gut at that moment?
That's a very good question. I've never quite thought of it that way, but yeah. Well, the answer to that is that I also had a very strong spiritual life. And so I was very attuned, you know, to God and God's voice and that whole aspect of things. And so I think that's what plugged me into my gut feeling and you know, I mean, just the conviction that this is not who I am.
Mm-hmm. And what was the response then from your family at that time?
You know, I know my mom has always supported me. And I think my dad just sort of, well, see, then he comes also, his mother, we were all born in Kenya, but his mother's from India. And so she used like Ayurvedic medicine on them. They hardly ever went to the doctor when they were young. So even though he was fully in the medical system, I think he had, you know, a root level trust and experience with herbal holistic medicine that I think, and they watched me, right? This had been 3 years. And my older brother had also been diagnosed with the same disease, and he had had, by that time, 2 surgeries. So they had really seen that the medical stuff just doesn't work very well. It keeps you alive, but in terms of quality of life, and, you know, for some people, they may get, you know, years of good stretches, but then, you know, it comes back. So it's like this thing that's always hanging over you that, oh, when am I going to go off the edge of the cliff again? So I think they've seen all of that. And, you know, I'm a very strong person. I have been since my infancy. So they were pretty aware that when I set my mind to something, I'm pretty much going to do it.
Yes. Now, so there was a pattern or a theme here then that your older brother had been diagnosed, and then, lo and behold, you were as well. So I think just so that everybody listening is really clear, because until I met you a number of years ago, I wasn't very familiar with what Crohn's entailed and what it meant. You mentioned earlier that it was located or diagnosed as being in your small and large intestine and also going into your stomach. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So can you explain exactly what Crohn's is?
Well, let's just backtrack a bit. Doctors view Crohn's, colitis, diverticulitis, IBS as completely different disorders and different diseases, and I don't. I view them as points along a continuum. Mm-hmm. So at the mildest edge of the continuum, you have IBS, which is irritable bowel syndrome, and then you go to colitis or diverticulitis, probably before colitis, then Crohn's, and then within those, you have all kinds of variations. You have, you know, different types of colitis, and you have something now that the doctors are calling Crohn's colitis, because I guess that's their way of admitting that actually there's quite a bit of shift and overlapping within these diseases. So what the way I view it is that it depends on how systemic the disease has gotten. Is it just in, you know, the upper mucosal lining of the intestine? Has it started to penetrate the intestinal walls? Have you got leaky gut where the pathogens are now going throughout your system? They're going to your joints, they're going to your skin, etc. So you kind of have to look at the whole spectrum. So at IBS, you have a lot of digestive problems, you know, indigestion, heartburn, bloating, gas. You may have either diarrhea or constipation, or it alternates. But then when you get into diverticulitis, you get into places where these pouches in your intestine can get inflamed and food can get stuck there. And then you're into sometimes a bit of an emergency situation, because if you can't clear that food, it can form a blockage. And then, you know, you can't eat anything, and you in extreme cases, you could have a rupture. That's very extreme. And then you move to colitis, where all of that stuff is still happening, plus you have some ulceration and bleeding from the intestinal lining. Okay, so that now we've got the blood part starting. And then you progress along the line to Crohn's, which is where you've got all of that stuff we already talked about, plus the bleeding, plus you actually have the wounds that are not just sitting on the surface of the intestine. They're actually going into the intestinal wall, sometimes going right through the intestinal wall. People with Crohn's will get fistulas where the infection will tunnel through the intestinal wall, through the bone, and come out, you know, say, at the tailbone. And you'll have a drainage hole there. So it just becomes very systemic by the time you've hit Crohn's, and your everything is involved. Your endocrine system, your often your circulatory system is impacted. So it's basically a full body illness by that point.
And Jeannie, you talked about the continuum. Is somebody usually diagnosed with IBS, and then if it's not resolved, it moves into each illness, or would somebody be diagnosed with colitis, say?
Well, the medical profession will tell you no, that once you're diagnosed, that's what it is, except that it does happen. And so they kind of then think, oh, well, now you've got this as well. And they don't really see it, that the condition has worsened and has moved. And then some people, you know, let's say they have IBS, they could just have IBS for their whole life. It doesn't necessarily have to worsen. It really depends on what you're doing, and, you know, both on the positive and the negative side. It depends on the stressors in your life, because, you know, as you know, you can have a certain illness, but if you load a whole pile of, like, the physical picture can stay the same, but if you all of a sudden get a whole pile of stress coming down, maybe a death, a divorce, a few things happening, all of a sudden it tips the person into a more serious illness or a new manifestation of their illness.
Okay, so the usual medical model is to blast the system with drugs at that point.
Yes.
Okay, and you
and
you
sometimes
mentioned
surgery, and sometimes yeah. surgery.
Okay, and in my introduction, I mentioned that at that point the disease can worsen and become more systemically entrenched. What exactly does that mean?
Well, I've been working with a medical doctor who used my protocols to heal his daughter. He actually is a board-certified cardiologist, and he has an additional specialty in emergency medicine. So he's quite an accomplished fellow in the medical field. And he did the same thing. He had his daughter on the medical protocols and then realized, like, oh, my gosh, this is so bad for her, and it's not working. And then he was actually referred by a pediatrician in New York to my book and read it and went, oh, this makes total sense, and because, of course, he'd been reading all the medical literature at the same time. So what he realized was that he then delved more deeply into the drug side of things, right? And what he realized as he was reading through is that he started to say to me, you know, I think, you know, I obviously I can't prove it, but I have a strong suspicion that a lot of these drugs that they're using to treat Crohn's and colitis are actually causing the more serious manifestations of the disease. So we take fistulas, for example. If you take a person with Crohn's and you don't use the drugs on them, they almost never develop a fistula. And so he's saying, I think it's the drugs that are suppressing, right, pushing it down into the deeper levels of the body. Instead of allowing the intestine to deal with infection, they're completely suppressing the body's immune system. And so the body is like, the body can't leave infection trapped in the body. It'll tunnel another way to try and drain that infection, because the way it's trying to get rid of it is being blocked by the drug.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's sort of, and he's actually in the process of writing a book, and I've read about half of it, and it's absolutely brilliant, where he actually goes into the science behind these assertions and showing how not just the drugs but the surgeries are very rarely a good idea, because they actually make things worse and they make your disease more complicated. So when people come to my protocols, that's a big factor to take in when they say, well, how long will this take? You know, well, if you're newly diagnosed and you haven't taken all the drugs, you can be healed in 6 months. We have people who've done that. But if you've started on the drugs or you've had this disease for 10 years, I have people coming to my protocols. They've had Crohn's or colitis for 30 years, and they've been off and on drugs the entire time. That person's not going to heal in 6 months. There is so much damage, and the damage is so multi-layered. It's probably going to take that person 2 to 3 years. But they'll get there. Because that's the wonderful thing about the body. When you give it both the physical and the emotional support that it needs, it will heal.
Yes, the emotional, from our line of work, being the key here, the emotional support. Now, earlier you mentioned that when you had that gut feeling of this is not my life and not who I am or I particularly want to be, you said, so I went off in a different direction and I found the answers differently. And you've also talked a lot about your protocols. So can you tell us a little bit about the protocols, what you've developed and what you experienced yourself, Jeannie? Because knowing you so well, I know that there is nothing that you suggest to any of your customers or clients that you haven't either created yourself or tried yourself as well. So what were you looking for when you decided to wave goodbye to the medical model and go in search of healing yourself, and what did you find, I guess?
Well, I was looking for whatever worked. I had no preset. I just, you know, I wanted to stop the bleeding. I'd had bleeding to the point of, you know, severe hemorrhaging. So I wanted to get rid of the bleeding for sure, so healing the intestinal lining. I had diarrhea for, you know, years and years and years. I had anemia, I had bloating, I had every single thing I ate caused me intestinal pain, sometimes extreme, you know, to the point where, you know, I'd be taken to the hospital and they'd basically freeze my entire intestines to stop them from spasming and the pain. So I was looking for a solution to everything, and I didn't really have any preconceptions, I didn't have any outline, I was just, okay, I'm going to go looking and I'm going to try everything. So the stuff that I tried is not really relevant because I tried, you know, 50 million different things in a seven-year period. So what I present people with are just what works. And then since I wrote the first edition of my book back in 2000, we've actually improved some of the protocols because, of course, as the research improves and as new substances become available on the market, we can say, oh, well, we used to use this to kill pathogens. Now we've got this, and it's like 10 times faster. It's more, it's stronger, you know, and so we switch to that. So there's basically 8 key protocols that you need to use when you're healing an intestinal disease. And it, depending on how quickly, like, so let's just say you want to heal it as quickly as possible. You would, number one, rest the bowel, okay? So you take somebody who's having trouble eating anything without getting pain or bleeding or whatever. They have to give themselves bowel rest. So they would ingest something called an elemental food formula, which is, this was developed by NASA to feed the astronauts in space because it produced minimal fecal matter, right? Because they don't want they don't want a lot of poo when they're up in that rocket for how long are they stuck in there. But yet it provides all the nutrients. So we have, I was cobbling together my own formula, ordering stuff all over the place, and then a company approached me and said, do you want to produce this? And I said, yes, please. So now I have my own product that people can go on if they want to use that. Because the pharmaceutical versions, again, because they're developed from within the medical pharmaceutical community, they have artificial flavors, they have artificial sweeteners, they have incredibly high levels of sugar, like they're just crazy. They're stuff I wouldn't, you know, give to an animal, let alone a human. So first of all, you rest the bowel and you take the stress off the digestive system and you really reduce the fecal matter and you basically give it time and space to heal. So then what you do simultaneously is you eradicate the pathogens. So there's a big debate in the medical community whether these diseases are linked to infection or whether they're not. My attitude is it doesn't matter what caused it. By the time you've gone through the medical protocols, which wipe out your good flora, and you've been in a hospital setting, which we know are highly infective environments, you've got something. So let's just deal with it right off the top. So we eradicate pathogens, whether they were part of your disease causation or whether they came in later, we don't care. Let's just get rid of them. Then you repopulate your entire gastrointestinal tract from your mouth to your anus with good bacteria. And again, these have to be very specific types of bacteria. They have to be at therapeutic levels. There's a whole, you know, the probiotic section in Listen to Your Gut is 30 pages long because this is something that people really have to understand in order to get the results from. Step number 4 is you heal the inflammation and ulceration. So you have to go straight into the anti-inflammatories and the actual wound healers. Number 5, you resolve your nutrient deficiencies, because if you haven't been digesting or absorbing your food properly, you're going to have very foundational nutrient deficiencies. And as we know, like if the body is just lacking, say, vitamin C, well, blood can't clot. So you need to hit all of those across a broad spectrum. You need to get all the vitamins, all the minerals, including the trace minerals. Number 6, you detox your living environment and you create a supportive environment in which to heal. And I think this goes for any disease. You know, if you're trying to, you're doing all this stuff to try and heal yourself, but yet your home is essentially toxic. It's off-gassing. You're sleeping in things that are assailing you with toxins all night long. You're not helping your body to heal. You're making it difficult for your body to heal. So I have an entire chapter in Listen to Your Gut. I take people through their kitchen, through their bedroom, through their, and I tell them, okay, these are the things that you've got to do, and then these are things you do as you get the money available and et cetera, et cetera. So that's number 6. Number 7, you have to heal the emotional contributors. And so this is where we get into the whole EFT thing. And the reason I love EFT for my readers is that, you know, if people just have psychotherapy or they have solution-focused counseling or something like that, it's not of very much value because it doesn't integrate with the actual physical body. And from trying, you know, all these different types of therapies, I found the most effective ones are the mind-body integration healing tools. So EFT, craniosacral therapy at level 2 or higher, hypnotherapy. But for myself personally, I found the most long-term results from EFT. So I do try to get everybody working with EFT to heal that element of their illness. And then the final one, number 8, is you need to balance your endocrine system because that's your hormonal system. Anybody with any chronic illness, at least your adrenals and your thyroid are going to be out of whack just from the stress of the illness and the, you know, the lack of sleep and the fatigue and all the rest of it. And then from there it can progress deeper. So everybody has a bit of a different hormonal picture and, you know, they may need different supplements and different amounts to balance themselves. But that's basically, those are basically the 8 steps. So rest the bowel, eradicate pathogens, repopulate the gastrointestinal tract with good bacteria, heal inflammation and ulceration, resolve nutrient deficiencies, detox your living environment, heal the emotional contributors, and balance your endocrine system.
And wow. So an extensive list and results-oriented as well. You've tried this yourself, and it works. And it works for thousands of your readers, clients, and customers.
That's right. I've had about 20,000 people go through my program by now. So I have, you know, literally thousands and thousands of letters from them. And people can at least get med-free, and depending on how much they're willing to commit. And you know, and it's funny because the place where they're healing will often stall. People are much more willing to do all these physical things than they are to get into the emotional side. And that's where
right.
someone's healing might stall.
And listening to you list those is fascinating for me because the work that I do being related to chronic and serious illness, involves a lot of my clients do have diverticulitis, colitis, Crohn's, IBS, and many of them either have been and they've come off or are still on the drugs. And so the work that we do, I never suggest that they come off them. That's down to them and, of course, their doctors and their specialists and so forth. But the work that I do is working alongside that. And what is wonderful, Jeannie, and most usual as well, is if a client is on a drug or a variety of drugs when we start the EFT work, after some time, they will lessen the dosage, which is fantastic and what I expect as well. And then ultimately, our goal, of course, is for them to come off the drugs altogether. So you, I know that you're very big on healing the emotional contributors. So I'd like to go back to some of the things you listed as what you believe was a cause of the Crohn's. You said you were triple vaccinated because you're living in various countries. And your diet was pretty lousy. And you were constantly on antibiotics. So in your opinion, what did those do to the body, first of all?
Well, vaccination really takes out a large percentage of your immune system. And I don't want to go into that too much. It's a huge separate topic. But let's just say that I have 3 children and none of them are vaccinated. So that tells you where I stand on that. And then the diet, of course, is, I mean, we're talking about the gut. The diet is absolutely key. I mean, for any illness, your diet is key because the human body is designed to work in a certain way and needs certain tools to work that are provided through your nutrition. And if your nutrition doesn't give your body the tools and it provides damaging things on a daily basis, you know, the body's only going to be able to maintain its homeostasis for so long before it's going to crash, you know, in whichever form is particular to your body. And then the antibiotics, well, the antibiotics wipe out your good bacteria. So they kill the bad bacteria, but they kill the good bacteria too. And then if you're not putting the good bacteria back in, like if I had a whole foods diet where I was eating fermented vegetables and maybe kefir and homemade yogurt on a daily basis, maybe I could have had those antibiotics and been okay because my diet would have replaced the probiotics mm-hmm. that were wiped out. But I wasn't. It was wiping everything out and leaving me with a void. Well, you know what nature does in a void. It rushes in to fill it. And what's in our environment? Is there predominantly good bacteria in our environment? Is there predominantly bad bacteria? How strong is the bad bacteria? And as you know, as vaccination becomes more and more widespread and antibiotic use has reached, you know, huge levels, the bad bacteria are getting very strong and very prolific. So it's you know, if you don't have anything there to protect your body and for your body to use as tools to fight things off, you're basically going to become pathogenic at some point.
When I work with my clients, Jeannie, I use the analogy of the rain barrel. So I say, if the rain barrel is outside, it's raining torrentially. Of course, the barrel starts to fill with water, and then there's only so much that the barrel can take until the water level is at the top, and inevitably it overflows. And it's my belief that our body is the same as this. So you had the vaccinations, the diet, the antibiotics, and so your water level, so to speak, in your rain barrel was already teetering very close to the top. And then you mentioned earlier of the physical abuse and as I know, various other stresses that were going on. Do you believe, therefore, because you're talking about emotional contributors, so that was the part or the contribution that allowed the water to flow over the side of the rain barrel?
Well, that's very interesting, and it's hard to know in what order these things occur, right?
Mm-hmm, like maybe, that's right.
Maybe the abuse and the vaccination filled the rain barrel and the diet tipped it over the, you know, or the antibiotics tipped it. We can't really say which item tipped it, but definitely, well, it's funny, though, that we should say that because my husband believes that if there wasn't the, abusive environment in the home, that I would not have gotten Crohn's. He thinks that, you know, because he says, you know, you are so strong, I don't think you would have got it. But it was the never feeling safe that just was the thing that made you develop Crohn's.
Yes.
So,
The important part of my work with EFT is I always say to the clients, we must go back to the beginning. So whatever you're feeling now, whatever the symptoms are that are showing up, whatever shape your body is in, this is the end result. This is the symptoms. We've got to find out what the root cause is, what has contributed to this. We always go back to the few years leading up to the time of diagnosis or to the person feeling unwell in the first place before they could be diagnosed. And many of my clients with Crohn's, colitis, diverticulitis were not diagnosed very quickly. Like you mentioned earlier, if somebody's diagnosed and they can quickly work in the field of non-medical field to heal themselves, there's every chance that they can overcome it within 6 months or so. Mm-hmm. So if somebody can maybe identify what was going on for them in the years preceding the illness, it may be the year or a few years before, and work through that with EFT, then it takes out a lot of the charge and a lot of what I call what's the clutter that's filling up the emotional system, the energy system. So when you were working on your healing journey, when did you find EFT and how did you use it?
Oh, that is a really good question. When did I find it? That's something I've never even thought of before. But for sure it's been over a decade, I'd say.
I mean,
it was way back.
Than I have.
Yeah, it was way back when, Gary Craig was just sort of had a little site and not much on there, and I can't even remember how I heard about it now. But I did go to the site, and I downloaded his free basic training manual that he had, and I started working with it. And it was what was very interesting with EFT is it didn't work at all for me. And I really tried it, and I booked some sessions with some therapists, and nothing worked. But I just could not leave it alone. It was, again, that gut feeling that there is something here. This should work. It really, but I couldn't get it to work. 2 years, I played around with EFT, doing it myself, maybe having an occasional session, couldn't get any results to speak of. And then I think I finally went, okay, enough. Commit to it. Do it properly. Book in for a series of sessions. And that's when I thought saw things start to shift. And then about that time was when I found you, Annabelle. And didn't I book 10 sessions with you right off the bat?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah, because I thought, enough. This is somebody who obviously totally knows what she's doing. She understands chronic illness and all the layers. And I am going to give this a proper go. And so I booked in for those 10 sessions, and that's when EFT started to work for me, and it worked big time, like really shifting things and having them stay shifted. So, Jeannie,
the listeners who are perhaps are new to EFT or they're considering using it for a very serious chronic illness, what were the things that you were tapping on initially when you said it either wasn't working at all or it wasn't holding? Can you remember?
Well, I think I was, like, because I didn't understand how EFT worked, I was, you know, trying to address huge issues that have, you know, multiple roots and layers leading into it, but I was just attacking one aspect and saying, okay, well, there, that didn't work. So maybe I was trying to, say, address diarrhea. Well, it's not working. Well, because there's you know, like 5 or 6 different issues and aspects feeding into the diarrhea, and I'm only attacking at the very base physical layer, you know. Even though I'm having all these bowel movements, well, that's not going to do much. But because I didn't understand how EFT worked and I hadn't applied myself to really learning it, you know, I didn't get the videos, I didn't do the training myself. And then until I found you, I hadn't committed to working with a practitioner who understood properly how to use it.
Yeah,
I was sort of.
It's interesting for me to hear you say that because a lot of the time when I start working with somebody initially, I'll ask them if they've had some experience with EFT, maybe they've been tapping on themselves. They've done as you have, so maybe downloaded the original manual. Now there's a lot of YouTube videos. So I'll ask them, what kind of things have you been saying? And they'll say something like, oh, even though I have Crohn's disease, I deeply and completely
accept
myself.
I know, exactly.
Like you mentioned, the diarrhea. Even though I have diarrhea, I do think of it. And of course, that's the truth. I don't deny that. That they are doing what is stated, which is they're acknowledging what's going on for them. But that is just way too global. And we have to, I say, go back to the beginning and work out, well, why might it be that this is happening? And of course, we may not know why it's happening. We may have some ideas. I mean, why would we know? If we knew, we would probably not be in the situation that we're in. But we've got to work out, okay, when did it start? What was going on at the time for me? Why might it be that my body isn't healing from this right now when I've tried X, Y, and Z? So I always applaud anyone who at least is getting into tapping, but we need to get very specific and find out what the root causes are. And as I tell my students, something like even though I have Crohn's disease is the tabletop. That's the end result. But we want to find out what the table legs are, like what's contributed to this.
Well, and I think as well, the other really important thing for anybody who has a chronic illness is you have a lot of stuff. Like, there's no way around it. There's, for me, I mean, I had so many layers and so many roots feeding into that there's no way you could just do, you know, a couple hours of tapping and see any appreciable difference for these things that are so deeply layered. So, but I'll tell you what, the other thing that gave me was part of what formed my, oh, I know this works, this should work, is that I would do it for my kids and boof, it would work really well. I'd be like, oh, so it works. It'll work for it because, of course, kids, they don't have. My kids were 3 and 2. They didn't have time to accumulate all these layers that an adult has. And, you know, like teething pain, this is something very basic. Pain, okay, we can, and it works. It works extremely well. So there were these things that worked for the other people I was doing it for, but I just wasn't getting the results for myself. And, again, I think it was, you know, what I discussed, that I wasn't realizing the extent and the depth and the layers that were involved.
Would you be willing to share some of the things that, if you can recall, that you and I did tap on, just to give people an insight into, okay, so that's the direction that I could go in, that that's something I could consider to work through?
Well, I think a main feeder route, definitely for digestive illness, maybe other illnesses too, is a foundational feeling of not feeling safe. So, and it's interesting again, so we talk about going back. Well, this goes back to infancy, because with my older brother and I, who were both diagnosed with Crohn's, my mom used the stick them in the crib and let them cry method. And we did. I mean, we wailed for, I mean, I cried for a week solid. So you have to think of that. Okay, there's an infant. Oh, and then along with that came the trapped feeling, right? I'm in a crib with bars. I'm imprisoned. I'm trapped. I'm crying and crying for help, and nobody ever comes. So the foundational lesson to that infant is, number one, you're trapped, and number two, you're alone, and number three, you're not safe. There's no safety. You can't even move. You can't even stand up. You're like this sitting duck for anything to come and, you know, and there's no help, and nobody's checking on you. Right? They just leave you there the whole night. You cry the whole night, seven nights in a row. What does that do to the foundational feelings within that person that pervades through their entire body about their feeling of themselves and their place in the world? So both my older brother and I had that as infants. By the time my younger brother was born, my mother had figured out this is really not a good thing to do to a child. My brother was not left to cry. My mother, you know, went to him and gave him what he needed. Well, and also by this time my father had mellowed a lot and the abuse was far less, plus I was protecting him. So he had a completely different childhood from my older brother and I, although the food was getting a bit healthier because I was by then learning about food and starting to educate my mother. So here you have the third child from exactly the same family environment but with a completely different childhood, and he has no illness.
Mm-hmm.
So when I know when you and I tapped at the beginning, we had to really get into the trapped feeling. We had to really get into the not feeling safe, you know, because if you don't feel safe, how are you going to heal?
Absolutely. And again, just to be clear for people listening, even though Jeannie identified a root cause, like a big one, from being the baby through in toddler and into young child and teenage years, even though I didn't feel safe, it's still quite global. You'd need to
yeah.
identify the strings attached to that, all those aspects of why you didn't feel safe, which is what we did exactly. You also mentioned, of course, Jeannie, that you, as a girl, I guess, I don't know exactly why, but you chose to, or you felt obliged to protect your youngest brother. And that must have been quite a responsibility on a little girl.
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't think I'd, because of that family environment, I don't think I'd been a little girl. I didn't have a space to be a little girl, right?
Wow.
So, again, that's another, you see what I mean? Like, when you hear these things and you map them out, you're like, well, no wonder I couldn't shift things on my own. I mean, there's so much there. There's so many deep roots and there's so many layers that I really needed, you know, either I needed to either have somebody like you, or I would needed to have done the EFT practitioner training to get that skill level up myself, which I've just done with you now. But I mean, this is like how many 10 years later or whatever. But if I'd done that at the beginning or gotten the DVD series, that would have been a way that I could have gotten better results if I wanted to just work on my own.
Yes, and many of the themes that you've just mentioned are things that I hear every day with my clients who have a chronic condition. And there's often an underlying ripple of I had to be responsible. So I was either responsible for one of my parents, maybe they were sick or they weren't there, and I kind of had to step up to the plate and be the mother or the father, or I had to be responsible for one of my siblings. So I often hear that, and I often hear the home environment was not safe for some reason. So maybe the mother or the father were very imposing and threatening in some way, verbally, physically, whatever it is. And then this, when you said, I don't know that I ever had a chance to be a little girl, man, do I hear that so many times. People are wandering around, having not actually ever experienced a childhood and really felt the joy of play and fun in a safe place. So they're like adults in miniature, in a child's body. Now, what does that do when it's all stuffed down and not ever resolved in any way? Because how can a child discuss that? It is what it is. It's the family environment. It's familiar. So no matter, my sense is, no matter what the stress was that you were under or how you felt, for you it was a normal family environment.
Well, and this is the amazing thing, because I did a teleseminar with Dr. Gabor Maté, who's a medical doctor. He wrote the book, When the Body Says No. It's a fabulous book, went to become an international bestseller. And in it, he talks about this experiment where, you know, he says, listen, you don't have to realize that your body's being stressed for the stress domino effect to be happening in your physical body. For the hormone cascade to be taking place, the blood pressure to be rising, et cetera, there's a whole list of things that happen physically when there's stress. And you can be, la, 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 life is great. That's how you can be feeling, but all of this stuff is happening in your physical body. And I said, well, I don't get that. How can that be? He said, let's take it back to childhood. He said, you know, exactly what you've just outlined. When you're a child, maybe when it first starts happening as an infant, you're very stressed and you realize that this is a very stressful thing, that this is not right. But very quickly, it becomes your norm to your mind, right, to your emotional self. But to your physical body, it is still registering as a stressor. So what they'd done to even prove this is they did a little trial with a group of volunteers, and they showed them these very disturbing photographs. And they had them hooked up with the electrodes and all the different things that would measure the adrenaline response, the hormone cascade, the blood pressure, etc. And so they showed these people these photos, and these people were saying, yeah, okay. And they say, how did you feel when you looked at that? And they would say, well, you know, it was fine. No, and they would say, you know, no big deal. But their physical parameters were going through the roof. And they were completely unaware of that. So that's what happens when you have someone, well, I don't have stress. I feel fine. Oh, you know, that stuff happened in my childhood, but I've moved on. No, well, you may have moved on in your mind, but your body is still triggering over and over and over. So any kind of chronic stress like that is going to result in disease and illness. That's just the way the body works.
I agree. And, of course, we're often told in society as well, oh, it was your childhood. Let go of it. That was a long time ago. What are you worrying about now? You're in your 40s or whatever it is.
Yeah.
But and so once again, as adults, we're then told, oh, okay, so it's perhaps wrong to express how we feel about anything, especially our childhood, so I'll shove it back down again. So it's pushed down even further then, sort of like a double whammy. And through my work with my clients and more research as I'm recognizing these scenes coming up, I have even more of an awareness now, Jeannie, of the fight-flight response, but also the lesser-known or lesser-understood freeze response. So what happens, I mean, for example, to use your childhood when you were protecting your younger brother, feeling very unsafe, uncertain of the abuse, feeling, well, but not receiving the dietary requirements and all the rest of it, what was going on for you and how did you freeze during all of this so that it was locked into your system at that time, never to, well, unresolved until you started working through what had happened on your own and the effect that has on you, because you were permanently in fight or flight, that red flag was always waving, and of course then the freeze response kicked in. Even people think of fight, flight, freeze as in, oh, it had to be a massive trauma. Well, don't forget, for a child, a massive trauma could be being told by a teacher that their drawing wasn't good enough in class or something like that.
Yeah.
Or something that we might look back on now as adults and think, oh, well, that was pretty insignificant. I can't even recall why I'm thinking of that. But for you, with all that going on, there were traumas on a daily basis building up and building up.
And I think that's a very important point for people to keep in mind, is that these things are relative. So, you know, for one person, you know, being beaten up may have been, you know, what caused their trauma. I remember I had a friend as a girl, and she was absolutely traumatized for years because her father spanked her once. And I still remember her telling me about it and the intensity. And she said, "He spanked me so hard, I peed my pants." And she was horrified. And I remember looking at her going, "Are you kidding me? Like, that's it? That would be like somebody else telling me, and he flicked my shoulder. Who cares? That was nothing." But for her, it was huge. I think for her, that may have caused her more trauma than me getting pounded on for a couple of years. Seriously, mm-hmm. because it's all relative. And for her, it was an extremely horrifying, traumatic event. So even though you look back and you go, "Well, I wasn't beaten, or I wasn't sexually abused, or I was, you know," well, fine, but you have to look at yourself in isolation, just you, who you were, what was your norm, you know, what sensitivities you have, because, you know, different people have different sensitivity levels as well.
Yes, absolutely. So all relative to who the person is as a unique individual.
Yes,
now,
exactly. Wait, I want to jump in with something else, because this has kept occurring to me. What you said about many people with chronic illness and coming from that environment where, you know, for whatever reason they didn't have the good parenting and they had to grow up very quickly. In adult form, that takes on, you know, a classic aspect of chronic illness, which is people's inability to say no. You know, like they have to take care of everybody and they have to do everything. And if they say no, they feel crippled with guilt. And it's easier for them to just do it than to say no. And that's another thing I would say is almost across the board with people with Crohn's and colitis that they have trouble with. And it's an emotional state that needs to be healed before the physical body can then get the time and space to heal itself, because you're not running around doing everything for everybody else.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, I hear that practically with every client I work with. With a chronic illness, that I have to say yes. I feel guilty if I say no. It burdens me. I'm running the conversation through my head for the next few days. I feel terrible. I mean, only last week or the week before, I was working with an 18-year-old who has Crohn's, and we went back to a specific memory that happened at school with her, and I asked her a question about why she'd done something. She said, "Well, I have to. I'm the peacemaker in my group of friends." I thought, I bet you are. And the people pleasing, of course, is what I notice consistently, Jeannie, which is the kind of theme that may prevent someone from actually healing. And I wondered if you could talk a little more about that through the experience you've had with your clients and customers, why the body perhaps won't heal.
Well, what people don't realize, and I see this again and again and again, they completely underestimate the amount of time and energy it takes to heal. I mean, just to rebuild mucosal tissue takes a lot of protein. It takes a lot of energy. So if you're taking all of that energy and you're using it to do this and that and this and that, how much energy is left for your healing? And then if you're looking at somebody with a chronic illness, it would be very, very unusual for them to be getting a solid 8 hours of sleep a night. So they're not even recharging at night. So basically they've always got this drain on their energy, and instead of them realizing it and saying, "You know what, I need to do nothing for 6 months," and even to go to the point saying, "I need to work part-time," or, "I need to take a sabbatical. I'm taking 3 months off. And I'm going to rest my bowel, and I'm just going to do healing and nurturing things like yoga and tai chi and gentle walks." They try to fit their healing into their normal life, into their normal relationships. If they're a mother, how can you heal yourself when you're a mother of a toddler? It's not going to happen. That toddler is going to run a normal person into illness, right? You take a mother of a normal mother of a toddler, and that mother's getting more colds and more flus, and because she's run down, because the physical demands on the body are just too high. And so, again, we get back to the emotional. So how do you get the gumption to put down those kind of boundaries, to say, I need to take a sabbatical. I need to have my mother or my sister or my nanny or whatever I can afford come in for X number of hours a day so that I can nurture and sleep and rest and go to yoga class. People who have chronic illness are horrified at the thought of that. It's extremely difficult for them to even, you know, say, well, I'm going to go to yoga 3 times a week. I mean, that's a huge thing for them to take that hour or two to go do something nurturing for their body, or say, I'm going for a massage 3 times a week. Wow, that's like massive. And they don't realize that that is the tip of the iceberg that is needed to restore yourself to health, because you are so depleted and it takes a lot of energy to heal yourself. So if you try to do all those things without addressing all those emotional drivers underneath that are making you feel guilty, that are making you feel responsible for everybody, that are making you want to have everybody like you, etc., you're not going to get very far, right? And your healing's not going to be successful in the long term.
Exactly. So this is the part that EFT plays. When we address chronic illness, we go back to the beginning and work through the past, which could well have been the trigger, which I believe is fundamental. I mean, that's really where I start with my clients. And then, of course, there's the everyday stressors that you've just outlined, particularly if somebody is a parent or is caring for a parent themselves. Where do they set the boundaries, and how can they? A number of my clients are young, they work full-time, they may have children, and there are a lot of expectations upon them to quickly get well, and many of those expectations may be their own, to quickly get well so they can go back to their normal life, the life that they had before. And what I find fascinating with EFT, of course, is the more EFT they do and the more they start to heal and their perspective shifts and they have those cognitive shifts, is they realize the life they had before is not the life that they would like now, because it was the life they had before which inevitably contributed to where they are now. Most usually when I start working with a client, they'll say, I just want my old life back. But we have to reframe that so that it's very quickly realized, no, that's probably not what you want, because, hello, that led to where you are now. There are the wonderful elements of your life as you knew it. Of course we want to have those and another perspective as well. Of course, throughout all of this, because you and I have literally just touched the tip of the iceberg here. But for people listening, this could be very overwhelming. I mean, you made it very clear that addressing chronic illness is multi-layered, and it's essential to address the aspects that lead into these core beliefs, like, I don't feel safe, or I can't say no, or they'll expect me to X, Y, and Z. And this can be overwhelming for many people. I don't deny it. It was very overwhelming for me when I learned EFT and I was very ill, and I thought, my goodness, where on earth do I start? Now I suggest go back to the past, start with that, and ease your way through those events, and also, of course, work on how life is now. And all, it's not just I can't say no that crops up. It's also I feel guilty for being sick in the first place, or somebody might be angry or very, very frightened. They may be frightened of the future, so then there's those future fears to tap on. So one way to make all of this manageable and less daunting or intimidating, of course, is to do Gary Craig's personal peace procedure, which he said, write a list of every event, every limiting belief, every physical pain, you name it, just write it all down and work on one of them or more if you have the opportunity each day. And he was suggesting one a day, so then literally could well be 365 things on the list. And that is a way of managing what's happened and is going on for the person right now, in a way that doesn't overwhelm them.
Well, and I think it's also important to point out that it's not that you have to clear everything and then you see a positive result. Positive results are happening ongoing all the time, and that's what I think provides the motivation to keep going. Even if you don't see a change in the physical symptom, you will see a change in your attitude towards the physical symptom. You know, I think it's very key to know that pain does not have to mean suffering, right? The suffering is the emotional component of the pain experience. So you can say, okay, well, maybe I'm still having 5 bowel movements a day or 10 bowel movements a day, but all of a sudden, it's not bugging me so much. Before, I was like, oh, not enough. Oh, I can't believe it. How long? Right? You have the whole emotional reality that's happening around that symptom. And that can often lift fairly quickly with EFT. But getting the actual, and then maybe the bowel movements might go from 10 a day to 6 a day. Well, that's a huge improvement. It's not done, but it's a big improvement. It'll definitely make a difference to your life. So I think also, you know, to point out to people that it's not that you have to clear, you know, all this stuff and then finally you see things happening. There are going to be these gradual, steady improvements, you know, along the way that definitely provide you with the motivation to keep going.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, for many of my clients, it's the insights that they're having as to why their body has become sick in the first place, insights they're having as to the boundaries they're either setting or not setting, and the ease with which they're coming to those understandings, I guess. And the way that one of the biggest shifts I notice as well, Jeannie, is the acceptance of the self that happens. Because this is not a blame game. It's more about treating ourselves with compassion and kindness as we work through this. And I would encourage people to make a note of the changes too, because I think that builds confidence and it's motivating. So as you say, changes happen on a, well, daily, but hourly basis too. So it's not all work, and then there's the final result. It's a gradual progression.
Yes, exactly.
And now, go ahead, Jeannie.
No, I was going to say, or, you know, an alternative to your personal peace procedure, which is what I did, was to find a really good therapist. Because, I mean, I did those 10 sessions with you in what? Didn't I do them in like 2 weeks or 3 weeks?
Yes, you had asked for, I think, 3 sessions a week. Because that was the way that you process, and it worked really well for you. You said you wanted the momentum and to keep keep it up really high. A lot of the people that approach me feel like they want to process it slower, so they might work once a week. This is why I say when somebody approaches me to work with me that I will, we set up a contract of a minimum of 5 sessions because, as you mentioned earlier when we were talking, this is long-term healing. So we're not talking about years and years and years of EFT, but we're also not talking about 2 sessions and I'm done or I'm fixed in inverted commas. So I do ask for 5 sessions so that people can observe the change and have an awareness of their mind-body relationship.
Yes, exactly. Well, and also for you, like if you're a practitioner and you see someone's just on the verge of a breakthrough and then they don't come back, I mean, how frustrating is that? You don't want to have to, you know, be dealing with that every day too. It would be much better to have people who say, okay, well, you know, like I had said to you, in your experience, how many sessions do people need to do to see significant shift? And I think that's very key. I mean, a lot of practitioners don't want to say to people, well, you have to book 5 sessions or you have to book. But really, at the end of the day, they're actually doing those people a favor because they are the ones with the experience. If you're a practitioner and you're working with people with chronic illness all the time, you're the one who has the knowledge of how long it takes for people with these multi-layered conditions to see shift, not the person coming in, who's just, you know, primary mandate is probably going to be money because, you know, if you're ill, you're not usually making a lot of money. But at the same time, then if you don't heal yourself, you're never going to make money. So you're in this feedback loop and somebody's got to break it. And so I think the way that you do it, saying, I'm the practitioner, I know the way this works, I know how people with chronic illness progress, and I know that five sessions is what you need, and then you'll see shift, and then it'll actually be worth your money rather than coming for one or two and leaving. Well, that's a waste of money.
Yes, isn't it? Yes, kind of dabbling and trying it out a couple of times.
Yeah. And so I think the other thing you pointed out is really key, that people, depending on their personality type, have different ways of working. Some people are very slow, gradual changers. And if they tried to work fast, it would just give them stress. But then other people like me, we're like, okay, just get her done. And so we like to move fast. And if we were to try to move slow and whatever, that would probably be a bit stressful, because I'd be like, oh, my gosh, what am I doing? I'm waiting around. I'm, you know? So you really have to. And we do that with the physical part of my healing protocol, too. I always tell people, you have to make change at the pace that's right for you, because everybody's different. And so you need to stay within your safety zone, what you like and enjoy, and heal that way.
Yes, I think feeling safe throughout the healing is essential. And I recognize with my clients what they need, if they need a faster pace or to spend more time processing, because we don't want added stress into that rain barrel that's already overflowing.
Mm-hmm.
Jeannie, there are a number of people on the forum here, and I just want to ask, if you'd like to post a question for Jeannie, please feel free to do so. I will also mention at this stage, I have a feeling that my forum screen has frozen and there's an error sign that's coming up. So if you have posted a question and I can't read it, I do apologize for that. Here is my promise to you, if Jeannie is up for it, because I believe, as I say, we've just touched the tip of the iceberg, Jeannie, would you be willing to come back and talk a little further on this topic?
Sure, yeah. If you get a whole bunch of questions that need to be answered, we can come back and do it again.
Oh, wonderful. Thank you. Because I want people's questions to be answered. But before we wrap up the show today, Jeannie, I just wondered, was there anything that you would like to add that you feel we haven't addressed? Well, I'm sure there's many things we haven't addressed yet in an hour, but anything that you feel is important for the listeners to hear?
I think we've hit on the main things. I think the big thing is that for people to give themselves the time and the space to heal. That's the number one saboteur that I see in my readers, that they're doing everything they should, but they're working full time. Or they're saying, well, I'm doing everything I should, and I'm getting married in 2 months, so I have to be healed by then. Well, you can't put that kind of pressure on yourself. You've just sabotaged everything you're doing, because over everything you're doing is this pressure. You've put a time limit on it. And then the other thing, too, is to look at, I mean, we didn't talk about this, but I think this is another thing that's very key, is to look at your motivators and your existing saboteurs in your life. So, for example, I had a consult client, and he was doing everything right physically, and he was getting enough rest, and he was improving, and then all of a sudden things stalled. And then one day I was talking to him, and it came out, because his father owns an extremely successful international company, and he's obligated and groomed as the family heir to take over this business. He felt spiritually and in his gut that that's not what he wanted to do with his life, but he felt he didn't have a choice. Okay, so here we go with the trap thing.
Mm-hmm.
And instead of standing up to his father and saying no, his body was using his illness to do it for him. So every time he got well enough, his father would be, great, you can come back to the business. Oh, he'd have another flare-up. He'd get sick again because he's not standing up, speaking, setting his boundaries, and advocating for what he needs. So he's forcing his body to do it for him. So I think that's another key aspect, that when you're looking at your healing path and why things aren't progressing, you need to, and again, it plugs into what we were saying about the inability to say no and the people-pleasing. It's very key to look at where you need to be setting boundaries, but you don't feel you can, or you feel guilty, or you feel obligated, and all those other negative, damaging things. Because until you learn to speak for your body's needs, you are forcing your physical body to speak for you.
Yes, Absolutely. I mean, that is key for me. I mean, as Gabor Mate's book says, when the body says no, well, it says no on our behalf because we're either unwilling to or we're unable to. And so that has to, I mean, I don't particularly like the phrase of a breaking point, but there has to be some stop and stopping point. And it's the body. The body will say no for us. And that could be in the form of a chronic illness. It may be panic attacks. It may be claustrophobia. It could be anything, where migraines, whatever's going on for the individual. But it's the body saying, I've had enough of this current situation, whatever the situation is.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, we've just had some great things. Somebody's asking, is the show on iTunes? Yes, it is. It's actually, if you go on EFT Radio Online, you will find it there with all my other radio shows. And also boundaries. I need to hear this over and over, the person has said. Thank you very much. And also somebody said, I've never thought of it this way, forcing the physical body to speak for you. Jeannie, I think you need to come back as soon as possible so we can continue this discussion, certainly on boundaries and when the body says no on our behalf, because I think that's crucial. The understanding of those topics and, of course, more is crucial to healing, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Okay, so Jeannie, thank you so much for the discussion today, for everything that you've shared, your generous spirit, the protocols that you've listed, and your EFT journey, which I know when people play back and listen to is going to be extraordinarily helpful. Now, if somebody wants to contact you, how can they do that?
Well, the easiest way is to just go to my website, listentoyourgut.com, and there's contact information on there. And I'm also very active on my blog on that site, so people will often leave comments in the blog. And I prefer to respond in a public forum because then everybody benefits from the information and from the sharing. So the blog, or, you know, just go to my website and hit the contact, and it has information there.
And also, I mean, you're very generous with all your resources. I know that you have a huge library of YouTube videos.
Yes, yeah. So if you go to YouTube, my channel is Jeannie Thompson. So that's J-I-N-I and then Thompson with a P. And there's a lot of, I try to put helpful stuff up on there for people as well. And there's, if you look, there's a huge comments thing running underneath my videos too, because that's another place where people will ask me questions and I'll respond.
Oh, great. So pretty information-rich then on YouTube.
Yes.
Great. Thank you, Jeannie. So, everyone, I'll be back in 2 weeks when I'll be interviewing Ruanne Haas. Ruanne Haas is an EFT master practitioner, and she fits the temperament profile of the highly sensitive person or idealist healer. She's been in private practice for 25 years as a spiritual life path coach and intuitive mentor. Rue has an extensive experience in working with the energetic patterns which underlie chronic physical and emotional conditions, and is working with the subtle energy issues that arise in a highly sensitive person. And she's the author of several books on tapping and the highly sensitive temperament. So this is a wonderful follow-on from the work that Jeannie and I have discussed today. It's my belief that I am a highly sensitive person, so I am really excited about this. Please join us in 2 weeks' time. And again, my website is www.theefthealingcenter.com. And I'm also on Facebook and Twitter if you'd like to contact me through that way. And thank you so much again, Jeannie. It's been such a pleasure. And thank you, all of you, for listening. And see you next time. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.